This BizNews briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. It's Tuesday, the 25th of March. I'm Alec Hogg with your BizNews briefing. Well, on the BizNews TV channel, we're still digesting all of those keynotes, all 28 of them from earlier this month, the BizNews 7th conference, what we call BNC 7. And at the conference, Helen Ziller, the chair of the federal executive of the Democratic Alliance, told us that the age of coalition politics has just begun. Well, with the GNU partners locking horns over the still not universally accepted budget, a new area has emerged for potential conflict. That's on who South Africa's next ambassador to the United States of America will be. Our partners at Bloomberg spoke this morning to the DA's shadow minister of international relations.
The presidency in South Africa is delaying putting together a formal coalition government delegation. The Democratic Alliance, in light of the urgency around the situation, decided that myself and Andrew Whitfield would travel to Washington. We met with Marco Rubio, the Secretary of State's senior political counselor. We met with the National Security Council advisors on Africa. We met with the chairpersons of the House Foreign Affairs and Africa subcommittee, as well as ranking Democrat and Republican senators on those same committees. We were trying to find out from decision makers at both Congress and the White House what would be required from South Africa in terms of various foreign policy concessions that they would consider to be suitable in terms of de-escalating these increasing tensions. And we also, at the same time, wanted to provide factual, accurate information in regards to expropriation without compensation and race-based legislation.
So then what comes next? Has there been discussion around who will be the next ambassador in these discussions, and not just in the White House, but also within the government of national unity?
So I think this is the important point, is that we now have a coalition at the national government level in South Africa. The former Liberation Party that governed South Africa for 30 years, the African National Congress, received 39% of the vote. They no longer have a monopoly on foreign policy. Right. So as the DA have called, we released communications last week saying that we are calling on the presidency to initiate a formal foreign policy realignment and rehaul discussion at the national executive level, the cabinet level, and that we are requesting, whilst the constitution in South Africa is indeed clear that it is the president's prerogative, our founding statement of intent that codifies how the coalition will work states that there needs to be sufficient consensus in regards to any policy related decisions. So we are asking that the DA, as the second largest stakeholder, now has a voice in terms of making sure that the appropriate appointments are made instead of politically connected cadres, as has been the case for 30 years.
So that means no one has been named at this point in time.
No one has been named. I know that there are a number of names that are doing the rounds. That is bound to happen. We believe that the situation is indeed urgent. A new ambassador who is appropriately qualified and skilled must be appointed as soon as possible.
Right. It's a big, big story, that one. Helen Ziller was quoted recently as saying that she thinks Tony Leon would be a good ambassador. It'd be very hard to find someone better than him, given the man's intellect and understanding of the South African political scenario, as well as his global insights. Jacob Zuma's MK party recorded a historic victory last week in a by-election. It won in Saldanha Bay in Ward 1. It wiped out the long-standing position that the ANC had had in that ward. It pulled the ANC down from 54% to 31%. The MK came from nowhere to 44%. This is the first time that Jacob Zuma's party has won anything in the Western Cape. I spoke to Saldanha Bay's executive mayor, Andre Truter, this morning to get some context.
I was there and I was looking at the three stands, ANC, EFF, MK. And I thought to myself, well, it is the same thing. It is the same mother body with two splits or two breakaways. I think one mustn't overanalyze it. Mr. Biko ran a court election, but he's an old ANC councillor. That is a historical ANC ward, and he is an ANC councillor. In fact, he was a councillor in that ward, and it was before my time, but I believe a very successful councillor in that ward. So I think they had the best candidate. I think it's possibly the candidate that won the ward and not necessarily the party.
It is a very interesting breakdown of the councillors in the Saldanha Bay municipality, where you guys at the DA used to have over 50%. Now you've got just under 50%, 13 of the 27 councillors. But you've been mayor there since the November 2021 election. Who's supporting you of the other parties?
So we've got one councillor from the Freedom Front, which is our alliance partner. Saldanha's never a boring place. There was some good signs in last year's election. If you look at our count then, although it was a provincial and national, we were just over 51%. So there were good signs. But Saldanha's is actually, if you look at its makeup, it's actually been a good council. And has maybe fought at times, but we've also agreed on times on things that matter. And we've just received our Ratings Africa results again, and Saldanha Bay together with Swartland had the highest points in South Africa, knocking Midvaal off their first spot. So 2 years ago when we spoke, we were number one for the first time in the country. And last year we were number two, and this year number one again. But most importantly, Saldanha Bay moved up every single year in their points. So we're not in a competition with others. We're not in a competition with accolades. We're in a competition with ourselves to keep proving to ourselves that we collect our money and we spend it well, and we stop that there's any corruption, and that we are an accountable, responsible municipality.
Andre Treta is a former detective with the South African Police Services. So when he talks about corruption, you kind of get it. Interestingly enough, it is the top municipality in South Africa now for the second time in 3 years. So they are doing things that the voters in that municipality are appreciating. In the election last year, the national and provincial election last year, the DA got 51% of the vote, so they'll be hoping that they can hold on to that when the local elections occur towards the end of next year or early in 2027. But Mayor Treta and his team are not exactly celebrating right now, because over the weekend there was a tragedy that has hit international headlines, and very much so the aviation community here in South Africa, when the highly experienced pilot Colonel James O'Connell, an ex-SAF pilot and one of our top test pilots here in South Africa, died in a crash. Here is Mayor Treta's eyewitness account of what went on.
We were about to leave. We suddenly had a relief in the weather, and the clouds went up a bit. The ceiling was higher, and we even had a bit of sunshine, and I heard the birds starting up, and I said immediately to my wife and to Neil, I think we should watch this. This is so beautiful. She came past us, warmed up, took off in a northerly direction, and did one or two passes. And then she came from the Jacobsbaai side, from the western side, flying towards the eastern side over the air show. And the first thing that I noticed is that one of the landing gear was out. And then as it turned on its back in the roll, I saw that all the landing gear was out. And I was a little bit, I believe now it's called a dirty roll, I was a little bit perplexed, because to me it looked like his airspeed was fairly low. But I'm not an expert. I cannot speak on that. But yeah, as I was watching it, I saw the bird like starting to lose serious heart, and then actually came over our head of where we were standing, and we watched it right to the point of impact, which was extremely tragic to watch it happen. Very shocking for all of us. I immediately ran for my vehicle, and our fire station is right on the airport, our new central fire station. I rushed for there. When I got there, the first responders was already in the lorry and busy pulling out. I came out, and as I came out, the Air Force had a display there, and they had their fire machine there. And these guys just jumped into their vehicle, took it out of the display, came across, and joined our fire engine. But unfortunately, on our arrival on the scene, there was nothing that could be done for the colonel. But it was unbelievable to see these first responders, ambulance, fire services, police, at the speed that they responded, Alec. And everybody was very, very shocked, obviously. And my sincere condolences to his family and his friends, to the event organizers, and also to the public that had to see it. You know, that's something that will be burned into our brains. But what an honor it was to see him in that plane, and how beautifully he handled it. And I think it's aviation loss. Somebody said to me it was the last flying Impala Mark 1. I don't know if that's accurate, but that's what somebody said to me. So it was a bit of aviation history. I was very relieved that even in his last moment that he kept the plane away from the main airstrip area. And one can see that it appeared that he was trying to save the bird till the last moment. But yeah, how tragic to lose such an amazing pilot. And then, of course, hats off to the first responders. They were the true heroes on the day.
Tragic story there at an air show in Saldanha Bay over the weekend. Well, one of the parties that is going to be challenging the Democratic Alliance in Saldanha Bay at the next election is the Patriotic Alliance. It doesn't have a terribly big position at the moment. The DA with 13 of the 27 seats is relatively comfortable by having a coalition partner there in the Freedom Front Plus. But it'll be interesting to see, despite all the accolades that the mayor and his team have been receiving, whether or not they can hold on to that majority come the next election, because the Patriotic Alliance is making a strong run all around the country, primarily due to the charisma of its leader, Gayton McKenzie. Well, Gayton has a good record when it comes to predicting events, as he reminded us at BNC7, where he was one of the most popular speakers. But his claim to infallibility might be a bit of a stretch. My colleague, Kerry Lanahan at BizNews, took a closer look at the PA leader's forecasting record.
I've never gotten it wrong when it comes to predictions. And Alec is big enough to say, you've given me 9 predictions and they were all spot on. It's not because I'm smart or anything like that. Far from it, in fact. It's just because I'm a realist. I don't say what I'm feeling. I'm saying what the reality is on the ground.
When it comes to political predictions, few have made as bold claims as Gayton McKenzie, leader of the Patriotic Alliance. Known for his confidence in making forecasts, McKenzie has been vocal about his track record, one he claims is flawless.
I'm one person, I've made 10 predictions on your show. Not one of them were wrong.
But is that really the case? McKenzie says he's never been wrong, yet some of his predictions have raised more than a few questions.
I remember they were saying, when I said the ENC is going to go be under 40%, everybody was laughing at me. The very same people are now doing the same prediction.
He famously predicted that the ANC would dip below 40% in support, a bold claim that many dismissed as wishful thinking. And while recent polling has shown that the ANC is struggling, the idea that they'll collapse entirely remains highly contested. Then there's his take on the DA and the Western Cape, where he's not shy about predicting their fall.
The Western Cape, I don't think the Democratic Alliance will reach 35% in the Western Cape.
McKenzie argues that the DA's failure to connect with black and coloured communities will cost them dearly, particularly in the Western Cape. And here's where things get even more controversial. McKenzie has said he's never been wrong.
I have made 9 predictions on your shows over time. All 9 of them were correct.
Yet, let's not forget that not every one of his predictions has panned out as expected. The ANC dipping below 40%, still unproven. The DA losing grip on the Western Cape, hardly is a done deal. McKenzie has his supporters, but there's no shortage of critics who view his predictions as more hype than reality. Now, let's get into some statements made by McKenzie at the recent BizNews conference.
Is EFF dead? I said, no, EFF is not dead. EFF is in a coma. But it's a coma that they will wake up from. Trust me, I don't like those guys. But Malema is smart enough to find his way back. He's been given a setback that the best amongst us would have acted the same way that he's acting. He's lost 4 of his top guys, or 3 of his top guys. He lost Dalim Pofu, he lost Ndlozi, he lost Floyd. That's an earthquake. It's like using 80% of your board is speaking your language or your management. But I think Malema will bounce back around 2028. He will bounce back around that time.
Sure, Malema's lost some top lieutenants, but predicting his political death may turn out to be a misstep down the road. Let's talk about Jacob Zuma. McKenzie's prediction here is nothing short of explosive.
I think Cyril Ramaphosa is the strongest member in the ANC. If there was no Cyril Ramaphosa, Zuma would have already finished the ANC, I can promise you. Zuma, never forget what I'm going to tell you today. If you don't stop Jacob Zuma, he is going to lead this country in 2029. He's strong on his way, whether you like that or not. And Zuma's unapologetic of what he's going to do when he comes in. Expropriation without compensation is number one on his list. And that will destroy property rights. And any country with no property rights, it's not a country. What will stop Jacob Zuma? The GNU.
He claims that Zuma will make a political comeback and potentially lead South Africa by 2029. Yes, Zuma, who's been embroiled in corruption scandals and was forced out of office. But McKenzie argues that Zuma's influence is far from over. A return to Zuma-style politics? It's a possibility. But will South Africa really go down that path again?
In the world of business banking, projections, numbers, and your bottom line can often triumph over relationships. At Investec, we value both. That's why we understand that running a successful business takes endurance, drive, and partners who are willing to walk the journey with you. Make the move from business as usual to Investec Business Banking. Out of the ordinary.
At Sun Exchange, we make going solar simple, profitable, and completely risk-free. Join over 100 satisfied South African customers already enjoying the benefits of risk-free solar. Start saving today. Visit sunexchange.com and join the solar revolution.
Great work, Kerry. Well, somebody else who's pretty popular amongst the BizNews tribe is Elon Musk. And not surprisingly, not just here, but all over the world, he is a very famous figure. He is the richest man in the world by a long way, although his net worth, get this, is down $100 billion this year so far. He's still more than $100 billion ahead of the number two, who's Jeff Bezos. His net worth is about 84% of South Africa's GDP. So take all the money spent in South Africa in a year, imports, exports, what you and I spend, private consumption, expenditure, they call it, government spending, put it all together, and you take 84 cents in every rand spent. That's what Elon is worth today. Extraordinary, extraordinary successful entrepreneur. But the biggest part of his wealth is not where you think it is. It actually comes from SpaceX, and a big chunk of that is Starlink. Starlink, which is being denied to South Africans because of our BEE laws. Not that Elon's worrying too much. He's just been given approval to launch in India and Bangladesh, both of which are many times bigger than South Africa. And you're talking about another 1.5 billion people in the world. We've got 60 million here who are now going to have access potentially to Starlink. Our colleagues at the Financial Times of London had a look at all of this. And in this morning's FT News briefing, the host, Mark Filippino, spoke with Rafe Uddin.
SpaceX, the company founded by Elon Musk, is riding high in the extraterrestrial race. The best example of that might be Starlink. A big chunk of the world relies on the satellite internet service, but there are growing concerns over Musk's closeness to U.S. President Donald Trump and whether that's now a liability for Starlink. The FT's Rafe Uddin has been looking into this, and he joins me now. Let's hear the good news first. Just how well has Starlink been doing in recent years?
Effectively, Starlink is the dominant provider for what we call low Earth orbit constellation systems, these sort of satellite networks that provide broadband to hard-to-reach areas. The company has about 7,000 satellites up in space at the moment. And then beyond that, it has a raft of federal or government contracts. And then you get a span of private contracts. So a number of telecom providers, major airlines. It also plays a critical role in Ukraine on the front lines. So really, it's the leading player in this space.
Starlink has been around for a bit, but you know, Musk's relationship with Trump is kind of new. How has the business benefited from that relationship?
Yeah, so a good way to think about this is how was Starlink impacted by the previous administration? So under the Democrats, the Federal Communications Commission chair, Jessica Rosenworcel, had raised concerns about Starlink's dominant position in the market when she was asked about why Starlink had been sort of blocked from a major sort of rural broadband contract. Now, what we're seeing under Trump is that narrative around Starlink is shifting. The FCC is making overtures, and we reported last week that the head of that rural broadband program had been told to consider Starlink. So what we're seeing is that effectively, under Trump, Starlink could start to play a more prominent role in terms of U.S. federal contracts that had previously been barred or excluded from.
Now, how big of a boon is this for Musk personally? Like, how much of his wealth is tied to Starlink and SpaceX?
So what we've been seeing is that amid all of the protests and uproar about Musk, he's been impacted most at Tesla, the EV car maker. Sales have slumped in Europe. And during this period, what that's left is that SpaceX, the rocket maker that operates Starlink and owns Starlink, effectively has become this sort of golden goose for Musk. It's the strongest source of his net worth. Roughly half of his net worth is now tied to SpaceX. And so as it goes from strength to strength in the US, more of his wealth is going to be tied to this one company.
What are the downsides that you're seeing from Musk's relationship to Trump?
Starlink's role in a number of European countries means that it's seen as an easy target, given Musk's proximity to Trump. There are also fears about a peace settlement between Russia and Ukraine that could see Starlink either turned off or pulled back, and that could impact services there. And so we've seen a number of European providers, primarily Eutelsat, OneWeb, looking to basically replace Starlink on the front line. And so what we might see is that rivals in Europe start to leverage this proximity that Musk has to Trump to try and gain contracts and wins.
In the end, do you think that Musk is worried enough about Starlink to distance himself from Trump?
I think ultimately the benefits tied to being close to Trump far outweigh the negatives here. So we've seen in recent weeks that Starlink has been able to negotiate contracts or reach deals in places like India. And I'm told by officials in Bangladesh that they're also close to licenses there. That has nothing to do with his proximity to Trump, but there doesn't seem to be any concerns there. And then we've spoken about how the US administration is considering making some overtures. So that's a commercial boom for SpaceX and Starlink. And it's one that's tied to Trump and only Trump.
Well, Elon's wealth bumped up again last night as Tesla's share price rose 12% while we were sleeping. That's US time. The surge was due in part to the stock being oversold. It's down 50%, or was down 50% this year so far, but also news that the Trump administration is moving from broad-based tariffs to reciprocal, which means if South Africa charges American companies 30% to bring their cars in here, we could be hit by a 30% sanction when we take our cars there. That removed an approach that most analysts were saying would be negatively hurting Tesla. ARK Invest's Kathy Wood has been a longtime supporter of Tesla, and she was asked by our partners at Bloomberg if she's still a bull.
Has your bull case changed at the margins?
Well, first I'm going to give all the credit to the three analysts who are working on Tesla at ARK. And no, our outlook has not changed. What is going on right now, very short term, the economy is being hit in the U.S., lots of uncertainty. That's not good for any auto manufacturer. Of course, there's the political dynamic overlay, and I know that the authorities are going after that. I think that will pass. We also have the Model Y refresh, and we understand that the orders for the Model Y refreshed are going very strongly. I won't get mine for a very long time. They have a new low-cost car coming in the second quarter, which in the United States, I think it could sell for $30,000 or less. There's pent-up demand for that. So we've got a lot of rubber band stretching, and the most important one of all, of course, is Robotaxi. And Elon has announced that Tesla will launch its Robotaxi service commercially in Austin, Texas, in June. That is when analysts are going to have to put into their models what a robo-taxi service is. And it's a software-as-a-service model. Right. Very high margin, 80% plus for the platform companies, whereas the electric vehicle is 15, 20, 25% gross margin. So we think that robo-taxis will account for 90% of the value of the company in 5 years. And we're on record saying we believe in 5 years, the stock will hit $2,600. And that's not even including humanoid robots, which are now moving into the Tesla ecosystem much faster than even we expected. So more than a tenfold increase just from robotaxis. So.
You're not concerned over, let's call it noise, because of Elon Musk's role with the government, for example, and how that may or may have not contributed to the risk premium of the stock?
Yes, I think this is one reason the stock is down 50%. It's been cut in half. And I think this is all very short term. This is criminal activity, and this administration is cracking down on criminal activity. And oh, by the way, Tesla cars have a lot of cameras on them. So on X, we're getting to see the people who are committing these crimes, and the authorities are going after them.
Price to say you've added to your position
in
Tesla this week?
We post our trades at the end of every day, so you can see that we've added to our position.
Okay. Is there any corporate action you think they should entertain right now to boost the stock? Or do you think sentiment takes care of itself?
I think these launches, the Refresh Y, the low-cost car, and Robotaxi, those three, and there is one other thing, and this is more macro comment.
Sure.
We think the economy is getting hit by a lot of uncertainty. And I think a lot of people are scared for their jobs in the U.S. Anyone involved with the government, so federal, state, and local, or quasi-government in the healthcare and education space, you know, that could be as much as 30% of the labor force in the United States. And then we've got AI as another layer of uncertainty. We're seeing middle management teams actually being let go because of the productivity gains associated with AI. You know, their bosses can handle more and more and more over time. So that's another source of uncertainty, but we think that is going to play out positively longer term. Technology and breakthroughs in technologies are always associated with new jobs that we can't even imagine.
Right.
Cathy Wood from ARK Invest. We think that she's got an inside track into the future. Not everybody else agrees. Well, this has been your BizNews Briefing. I'll be back again tomorrow. Until then, cheerio. This BizNews Briefing is brought to you by Investec Business Banking. Make the move to private banking service now for your business.